This is the ABC, 3AR Melbourne regional station, and in the shortwave band, VLH9. Australian Eastern Time is 8 o'clock.
For the next 30 minutes, we'll take it from here with Joy Nichols, Dick Dempsey, and Jimmy Edwards. Other words of music will be heard from Wallace Eaton, Herbert Mostyn, and the Keynotes, and we have the augmented BBC Variety Orchestra conducted by Paul Fenelay. So if you're receiving us, loud and clear. Sale by auction. At Messrs. Norderby's on Thursday, at the direction of Mr. Richard Makepeace Dempsey, will be auctioned an exquisite collection of rare stamps. The stamps can be purchased en bloc or separately at 9 pence a thousand.
Well, Jimmy, there you are. If Dick can do it, you can too. Why don't you start a collection?
Well, I don't fancy taking the box round this audience. Oh, dear. Look at them.
No. They're on my stamp collection.
Oh.
Why don't you go along to the auction and put in a bid?
Oh, not likely. You know, the last auction I went to, I just happened to clear my throat, and the next thing I knew, I was the owner of a well-worn walnut whatnot. Besides, I don't see anything in this collection business.
Ah, it's a wonderful hobby. Everybody collects something.
Yes?
Edward G. Robinson collects paintings. George Sanders collects first edition. James Mason collects cats. Then there's Errol Flynn.
But it becomes a form of mania. You know, I know a girl who collects ivory. She tried to marry Terry Thomas for his teeth.
Yes, Dick, what is it about collecting? What's the big appeal in just hoarding things?
Well, it's absorbing. Oh, when I think of the happy hours I've spent, my dog at my side, sticking thousands of stamps per evening.
But what does it leave you with, Dick?
An empty stamp packet and a spaniel with a dry tongue. Oh, I had a wonderful collection.
Really?
Thousands. I gave away most of my British empire.
Well, that's fashionable anyway. But are these stamps worth anything?
Oh, they can be. For example, if you've got an unperforated triangular Zanzibar, you're worth the fortune.
Oh, I'd rather have my health.
Tell me, why are you selling your stamps now, Dick?
Well, for the last couple of years, I've been collecting something else.
A duck?
Don't be vulgar, Jimmy. One thing I hate is ignorance in others. What I'm collecting is objet d'art. Mm-hmm. Antique furniture, mainly. I'm concentrating on Louis Cartwright.
Louis Cartwright.
Him as well. Oh, there's a wonderful aesthetic appreciation in the craftsmanship of that era, which I find infinitely satisfying. I think I should have been born in the 18th century.
It was a near miss, Benjamin. But, where are you getting the money to buy all this expensive furniture?
Well, from the sale of my stamps. Oh, I had a stroke of luck. A bloke sold me a whole set of unused North Hebridean islands. Only a quid each.
North Hebridean islands? There isn't such a stamp.
There is, you know, George. Look, here's one.
So,
yes. Oh, yes. See? It's got a little blue and red shield and N-8-I on top. Now, what do you think I should get for them?
About 18 months.
18 months?
Yes, those are National Health Insurance stamps.
Came the wail of a child, hardest prayer.
whippoorwill out of the hill, they took a new nose. Pushed it through the horse, it was one, it was blue nose. And then they nursed it, and gave out the news that the Southland is up to the blue.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a unique opportunity of seeing our welfare state in operation. There goes old Mrs. Jones to collect her widow's pension of 32 and 6, followed by Frau Thorsten and her daughter to collect their 26 million quid. March into the Japanese section.
Well, how's this building the Coronation Night tea party getting on?
Oh, what a job. Everything's got to be organised, right down to the last spoonful of bicarbonate. We're going to have a decorated fertilizer barge floating up and down the canal, like a pleasure boat.
Yes, I suppose it will be.
Your mum was supposed to launch it, and we couldn't make her let go of the bottle.
What are you going to decorate the barge with, Walt?
Well, we did knock off 4 dozen of them little triangular flags. Some dishonest person pinched them.
Got any idea who did it?
No, I'm not saying. All I know is when Mrs. Wilson's baby bends over, it's an half look colourful.
Wallace, on this fertilizer barge, what are the amenities?
Oh, well, we've got dancing on the after deck, waltzes, tangos, valises, and your dad Jim will be demonstrating his new set, the exercise yard shuffle. And for the young people, there'll be swimming. They'll be able to dive off the side.
How high is the deck from the water, Walt?
Now, that depends on how the pumps are working. But for the older people, there'll be the building version of the popular television game, Down You Go.
What's that?
We sew lead weights in the landlord's swimming trousers. Then at midnight, we have a spit on the captain's brief.
Mutiny?
No. Spit. A roasting.
Roasting.
Instead of roasting or not, we're going one better.
Oh.
We're going to roast a whole African water buffalo.
How on earth did you get hold of an African water buffalo?
It's a long story. It started when Mr. George Cansdale was having a wash and brush up at Paddington Station. He hung his jacket with a teasing on a nook, just as Jim's brother coming.
Very well then.
Could it be a night of up Britain, long live freedom? Nah. Whisper who dares. Edith and Bessie are sleeping upstairs.
And now for type topics for the week.
Type topics. We read. Forward, Mr. Oh, no, we're doing it today. We read a bit in the paper last Monday about a quiz program on American radio which hit on a new idea. The first prize, the contestant won the announcer.
Yes, it is quite true. The winner got him for a week. The announcer had to go and stay at his house. So we thought, suppose the BBC tried the same stunt. Suppose a listener got awarded a BBC
minute. Mr. Johnny, if you put your Mac off.
Oh, thank you. Thank
come
you.
Through yes, to the living room. I've got some friends waiting who are dying to meet you. So here we are, friends. Our Apple's prize for sending in the first correct answer to the Radio Times crossword puzzle. David Daniel himself.
How do you do?
This is Mr. Crocker.
Yes.
Mrs. Winston, Miss.
Yes.
Mrs. Oldcliffe. Mrs. Grand. Grand! This is David Daniel from the Wireless. Oh, look at her smiling and nodding. She thinks it's supper time, 3 or 4.
Daniel, Jackson's my name.
How do you do?
How do you do? Jack out to me, friend. This is my eldest girl, Loretta. Stop doing your beads, Loretta. Go on, go on. Ask him what you want to ask him.
What is it, Loretta?
Oh, she's gone shy. Yes, he wanted you to say, this is the light program and general overseas service of the BBC.
Oh,
yes.
Yes.
Well, quiet, everybody. Quiet. Belt up for Dave. Ignore the old days.
Go on, Dave, boy.
Well, this is the light program and general overseas service of the BBC.
Very good, Dave. There, Loretta.
Loretta, if you don't stop that, you'll stay lost.
Tommy, I saw him in the hall. I was never so disappointed all my life.
Ethel, this is my wife, Dave.
Oh, I see. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Daniel.
Missed your little performance, Dave. Perhaps you'd like to give her an encore.
Well, I'd like
to. Quiet again for Dave.
Come on, Dave.
This is the light program and general overseas service of the BBC.
Daddy thought not. Yes. Did you think Gran caught it? Would you mind once more, Mr. Daniel, for Gran?
Well,
speak up a bit, you know, she's 82.
Well, this is the light program and general overseas service of the BBC.
Turn it down, you've got it on too loud.
Isn't it marvellous she's in a world of her own, you know?
Dave, tell me one thing I've always wondered. When you read the 1 o'clock news, do you have your lunch before or after? Or do you have sandwiches, Scooby?
Well, generally I have it before.
Go on.
See, otherwise, by the time I get to the canteen, the main dish is off.
Oh, have you ever canteen then? Fancy. I don't know, somehow I never thought of announcers as eating.
Dave, on that point, something occurs to me. If you have to bolt your lunch before, and then read off all that muck directly after every meal, do you ever get, a bit of a comeback? The return of the sausage, as it was?
Les, what a question. We're not all like you.
Well, these things have got to be fate. It's only nature, isn't it?
Well, of course, if such a thing did happen, we simply apologize. We would say, I beg your pardon.
Well, that's something that never occurred to me. I can see we're going to learn a lot from you over this week, Dave.
How about having the 9 o'clock news on, Les? Get the weather.
Well, we'll have the news. Wait a minute. Why have the wireless news on when we've got our own announcer here? Go on, Dave. Give us the 9 o'clock news. Go on, then.
But I don't know the 9 o'clock news.
Well, I'll read a bit from the evening paper.
Yeah. Quiet for Dave.
Go on, Dave.
Dave, I want to speak up a bit so grand to me. Here, read this to ear. This one, yes.
I have worn the new pencil satin skirt, and although it may be a success in Paris, I cannot see it catching on with British women.
Well, that was a week to remember, wasn't it, eh? He was a real nice lad, that Daniel, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He ate with us, he went out with us, he kept grand company. Didn't
he's on tonight, you know, he said. Oh, look to you. It's different when somebody's been one of the family for 7 old days. Which on, Liv.
Right.
This is the BBC Home Service. Saturday night theatre presents Edda Gabner by Hibson.
Remember what you said. Tell me about the birds and bees. How do you make a chicken sleep? Tell me a story, and then I'll go to bed.
Oh, worry, worry, weary and by day. Comes the time to go home without my raging pain. Home by the fire where a man can just relax. Slippers there by the chair. Not a worry, nor a care. Along comes Junior, swinging his little axe.
Uncle Timmy, tell me a story. Tell me your story. Remember what you said.
Oh, dear.
Tell me how your eye got black because the doorway hit your back. tell me a story, and then I'll go to bed.
All right. Once upon a time, I remember long ago.
Oh, now don't go back in history. Your memory's kind of slow.
Stop your noisy talking till I finish with my tale. Once upon a...
Upon a what?
Upon your back, you'll get a squat.
Tell me about the fish you caught that's bigger than a whale.
Oh, I haven't said.
Tell me a story. Remember what you said.
Yes.
You promised me. You said you would. You've got to give in, so I'll be good.
Here's a tale you won't forget.
Ow! My tail's
open. And now get up to bed.
Oh, gee, tell me another story, Uncle Jimmy.
All right, I'll tell you the story about a horrid little boy who kept pestering his uncle until he shot him.
No.
So we come to the Type Film Award, the Type Oscar. And this week it's the... Don't you realize that the Earth is being invaded by hostile creatures from another planet, all of them armed with strange, deadly weapons against which mankind has no defense, so that the whole of our world is in danger of being enslaved by these alien monsters from outer space? Type of fright. Yes, it's Hollywood's newest plot. We've had several recent films showing us what is likely to happen if invaders from Mars land their spaceships on American soil. Our Tosca-winning film shows what would happen if Martians had the infernal impudence to land on British soil. Ladies and gentlemen, we present Of Martian Men, or Here's a Thing. April the 15th, 1964, it happened. From the black night sky, there was a rush, a whoosh, a screaming blaze of light, and a great saucer-shaped object hurled itself into the peaceful earth of a Stoke Newington back garden.
A moment of silence. Then from inside came a scrabbling noise. A hatch lifted, and something snaked out. A scaly, groping tentacle with claws and a great hairy...
Wait a minute, Wallace. Frenchy, come out of that cupboard. It's only a story.
Martians had arrived. The first intimation the government had was the report from Albert Cramp, the Stoke Newington man in whose back garden the spaceship fell. The following morning, he arrived at the office of the Home Secretary, Sir Smedley Blatt.
It's the letter by saying that as regards the damage to the statue in Trafalgar Square, I'm afraid that's not my pigeon. Then finish yours effect, the onset. Oh, dear, the phone again. I won't keep you a moment, Mr. Clamp. Hello? There's Blathering here. Oh, it's you, Winnie. Mm. Yes, another late due last night, was it? Eh? Hey, you lost your garter? Well, I haven't got it. Goodbye.
Was that the Prime Minister?
No, it was one of the girls in the typing pool, you know. The man's not made of wood. No, Mr. Clamp, you wanted to see me.
Oh, sir, it's awful, sir, it's awful, sir. There is a thing at the bottom of my garden.
Well, my dear fellow, lots of old houses are built like that.
No, sir, I don't mean the potting shed.
Oh, probably.
Sir, I know you'll say I'm awfully nuts, but... Sir, a spaceship from another planet has landed on my rhubarb.
What the deuce is that?
Last night, sir, my wife Ada saw it come down, sir. Yes, she went out to try and track it over into the garden next door. We don't get on very well with the people next door. He's a Major Prendergast, sir,
yes.
The Indian Army. Very toppy nose.
Yes, yes.
Many's the time I've said to him, look here, Major, you can't talk to me like I was your number one boy.
Yes. Get on about the weird, unearthly monster.
Well, I told you, sir. Ada went out to have a deco. Then from the spaceship, a sort of tentacle came out, pointed a kind of tube at her. There was a flash. And my Ada, she was just a little pile of gray dust. I don't know what to make of it, sir.
Well, how about an egg timer?
Oh, sir, there are dozens of monsters on the spaceship, sir.
Oh.
What are they, sir? What are they?
What are they? Keep a cool head. Don't clamp, my dear panic. I'll send for the Home Office biologist. Ask Miss Caldicott to come up.
She's a very clever woman, this Miss Caldicott. A blue stocking, you know.
A blue stocking?
Yes, she keeps her fountain pen clipped to her nylons. Martian landing, eh? Could be the end of the world, you know. Absolutely the end of the world.
I know, sir.
I don't fancy our batsman's chance to keep Miller start sending down those bumpers, do you?
You sent for me, Sir Frederick?
Oh, yes, yes. Now, well, what was it I wanted you for?
The Martian's landing.
Yes, yes, the Martian's landing. Not getting hysterical, Mr. Clamp. I have to advise you, Miss Caldicott, that incredible though it may seem, the ultimate catastrophe is upon us.
The auditors have arrived.
Martians, Miss. Unearthly creatures, all scaly and horrible. Horrible, Miss. Horrible!
Destroy yourself, man. Smedley, give me the salient facts in terms of a scientist's can assimilate.
Oh, well, I see. They've turned his wife into an egg fireman and ruined his rhubarb.
Oh, I'm sorry I rounded on you, Clav. It must have been a pretty grievous blow.
I can't believe it. How can I keep going without Miss Stuart Rhubarb?
But you lost your wife.
It's nice of you to try and cheer me up, Miss. All I want is to see these creatures destroyed. Destroy them before they destroy us.
Sir Smedley, I have just come from analyzing the Martian invaders, and I have discovered they are an oxygen-breathing form of organic life.
Oh, they are awful.
Yes. Physically, they're 18 feet tall, and their eyes wave above the top of their heads on stalks.
Ah, Jiminy, they're absolutely built for coronation watching.
They have completely annihilated Stoke Newington and are advancing on Dalston Junction, wiping out everything in their path.
Sir Smedley, you must mobilize the army.
Send out jet bombers.
Warn the world.
But it's 5 to 5. Can't it wait till the morning?
Sir Smedley, the world must know now.
This is the Light Program and Overseas Service of the BBC. Here is an announcement of vital urgency. Our country is being invaded by the planet of Mars. All listeners are warned to stand by their radio sets, and the BBC will issue communiques at 15-minute intervals. Meanwhile, here is a record of Charlie Coon playing a medley from White Horse Inn. For just a moment, we interrupt the record to give you another report. At this moment, a hushed House of Commons is listening anxiously to the Home Secretary, Sir Smedley Blatherley.
The hooks in the cloakroom have definitely been swiped by somebody. Order, please. And now, Mr. Speaker, I come to the grave matter about which the whole world is deeply concerned, and which the members of this House have quite rightly...
Wait a minute.
Go back. Throw the lid of
your pencil.
Nothing
on there. Give it a chance to sharpen.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hansard. Now... Mr. Speaker, I have been in conference with my expert advisors all afternoon. I'm coming to that. If the honorable member would stop ogling Miss Pat Bondi Smith and pay attention for a bit, maybe we'd get on a bit faster. Mr. Speaker, I have brought to the House Mr. Albert Clamp himself.
Well, Your Honor, all I can say is that I never had a fair chance. One of them coppers getting a knife into you.
Clamp! Are you talking about this isn't a court? Perhaps Miss Caldicott does tell the House the whole situation.
The situation is that the Martians are invincible.
It's quite true.
They have this ray. A ray which induces a feeling of complete numbness.
But what sort of ray is it that induces complete numbness? Don't worry, Ted. We've resisted the temptation. Miss Caldicott, how can we hit back at them?
We have no way of hitting back. We're powerless against them. All we can do is surrender.
Surrender? You asked Britain to give in. Never. Mr. Speaker, honorable members, I think I will convey the spirit of the House when I say that this is ridiculous. Is this the spirit of Drake? Drake, the finest center forward Arsenal ever had? Surely there must be something that can kill the Martians and Martianesses.
I've got the answer. I alone can save the world.
Who said that?
Me, Albert Clamp.
Oh. Thank heavens, I thought it was an Aaron Bevan. You have the answer.
Mr. Smed, I've been having a big think.
You have?
I have. The only dead Martians are the ones that landed in my garden. And I think I know why. The Martians are susceptible to rhubarb.
The Martians?
Oh, Jesus. By jingo, it could be. It is possible for certain organic chemicals to affect their Martian metabolism. With rhubarb, you get hyperphosphate alkali and vituated potash.
Really? I get custard with mine. Speaker, honorable members, you realize what this means? Rhubarb is the way to save the world.
Now the scientists sprang into action. The finest brains in England blueprinted the rhubarb bomb. John Cockcroft, Frank Whittle, Dr. Penny, with the technical assistance of Philip Harbin. The situation was now desperate. New York had gone down magnificently. The south of France was overrun. The Bahamas were lost. It began to look as though the doctors would have to spend their next holiday at Westcote. Then word came that the rhubarb bomb was ready. It was a very grave Home Secretary who took his place in the observation trench, facing the oncoming fast.
Sorry I'm late. I had to wash my shirt. I'm on in the news on Friday. Now, this is it, isn't it? All set, Dr. Caldicott?
All set. In that bomb, there are 400 tons of concentrated stewed rhubarb.
Without sugar. Makes me tango all funny.
The destruction will take place in exactly 3 minutes.
How will we know when that is? We haven't got a watch.
Don't worry. I've brought me egg timer.
Well, hurry up. They're advancing towards us.
Right. I'll give Ada a bit of a tap. That's it. Now.
It's worked! Look at them reeling and staggering!
No, no! Don't get out of the trench! The whole area is still rhubarb active!
Look! Look, they're taking their spaceship! They're flying away!
We've won! The world is saved thanks to you, Mildred!
Mildred!
I'm talking to him! Thanks to your ingenuity, the Martians have gone. All that remains of their stay here are those strange ray guns with which they've reduced so many of us to little heaps of dust.
I reckon we should keep them ray guns. They're souvenirs of the greatest peril the world has ever known.
I absolutely concur.
Well, concur. I, in that case, you too shall have this one to keep for yourselves.
Oh, Charlie, very nice.
Take it, take it. But do be careful not to press this little knob where my finger is resting, because the slightest pressure will release it. Oh, somebody fetch the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, Fenelam, your method BBC Variety Orchestra, bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Joy Nichols, Dick Bentley, and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Herbert Mostyn, and the keynote. Frank Miller and Dennis North wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. Joy, Dick, and Jimmy invite you to tune in next week, and...